WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV with your host, Rebecca Terrell. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. And now, here's your host, Rebecca Terrell.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today is Tuesday, February 21st. Happy Mardi Gras. And here are some of the headlines we're following. President Joe Biden spent President's Day in Ukraine, posing for photo ops at the Marinsky Palace with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. His visit marks the approaching one-year anniversary of the Russian invasion on February 24th. Biden's trip was a reputed surprise, but the White House announced it notified Russia for deconfliction purposes. Republicans blasted the president for visiting Ukraine while ignoring the people of East Palestine, Ohio, the site of a train derailment and ongoing toxic chemical disaster. Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz tweeted his scorn, while Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene called for Biden's impeachment. Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania tweeted, "Breathtaking that President Biden can show up in Ukraine to ensure their border is secure, but can't do the same for America." Florida Governor Ron DeSantis told Fox and Friends that even though Biden seems very concerned about foreign borders, he's not doing anything to secure our own border here at home. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump is planning to visit East Palestine tomorrow. Within hours of that announcement, the Federal Emergency Management Agency reversed its decision to deny assistance to the area. FEMA originally answered Ohio Governor Mike DeWine's appeal, saying the situation did not qualify for federal assistance. China is threatening the United States with adopting countermeasures for downing its spy balloon on February 4th. During a press briefing last week, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin accused the U.S. of overreacting and undermining China's sovereignty. He blamed the Biden administration for leveraging the balloon incident as an excuse to impose illegal sanctions over Chinese companies and institutions. Wenbin did not specify what countermeasures would involve, but he said the balloon was just a weather monitoring device that blew off track. The Pentagon said it was a surveillance tool being used to spy on military sites, and that the U.S. is one of more than 40 countries across five continents targeted by China's aerospace espionage tactics. Craig Singleton, a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, asserted that such balloons had been broadly used by the United States and the Soviet Union during the Cold War and were a low-cost intelligence-gathering method. Meanwhile, South Africa has begun a 10-day joint military operation with Russia and China from the 17th to the 27th of February. This coincides with the anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The controversial drills, dubbed MOSI, meaning smoke in the local language, are scheduled to take place off the port cities of Durban and Richards Bay. They are the second in a series of routine drills that Pretoria hosts with foreign nations, including Russia. More than 350 members of South Africa's armed forces will take part in the exercises with an aim of sharing operational skills and knowledge with Russia and China. South Africa has refused to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. This does not, of course, sit well with the Ukrainian Association in South Africa.
The Ukrainian Association in South Africa certainly views this as South Africa taking a stance in supporting the war. The Ukrainian people in South Africa believe that this move to do this exercise with Russia means that South Africa has not taken a neutral position anymore. But the South African Minister of Defense says this is just standard procedure. The South African military has done these kind of exercises with many other countries before. They are kind of pretending that it's nothing, that, you know, it's not related to the war at all, and that they are not going to have their military exercises interrupted by people's opinions.
To discuss more, joining us now is The New American's Daniel Natal. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rebecca. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we're watching is just for our viewers' sake, if I may, the unraveling of the global system since World War II. I mean, we had the Bretton Woods system that was put in 1944. They started it, and it was basically the post-war global system. And the United States would basically patrol the naval trade lanes. They would give everybody equal access to kind of raw materials and resources, natural resources. And this was a huge anomalous period in world history that led to a lot of peace, you know, Pax Americana, because historically empires would fight each other for these trade routes, and you know, they would want colonies, and they'd be battling over these natural resources. And so we're basically watching the unraveling of that happening now. And one of the things that's happening is called the BRICS Consortium, which stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. So that last report about South Africa running military operations with China and Russia, I mean, that's part of the BRICS thing. So what we're watching is they're basically creating a second kind of parallel economic system to rival the United States. And so this is very, very dangerous in terms of, you know, kind of like historical norms, which means war. So,
right. It was kind of odd that the president would ditch the United States on President's Day to go over to kind of start to foment some of this, especially because George Washington himself had warned us in very strong terms in his address to his troops about avoiding foreign conflicts and the importance of maintaining our national boundaries and taking care of our own turf rather than worrying about other people's. Right.
Yeah, exactly. The entangling alliances. You warned us against entangling alliances. And this is exactly what the United States is kind of strayed into, which is the classic like trap of empire. Because George Washington was speaking from the point of view of a republic, and Biden is operating from the point of view of an empire. And so he's in the Ukraine basically to try to bolster up the NATO system that was created as part of that Bretton Woods system, you know, that has been in place since the end of World War II. And there was a geopolitical strategist who used to work at Stratford named Peter Zion, and he talked about that. He said no matter who was president, they would have to preside over the collapsing global supply chains and the deglobalization process that had already started. So he said whether it was Trump or Hillary Clinton, whether it was Trump or Biden, they would have to start kind of reconfiguring things so that, you know, the United States would have an ascendancy after the collapse of that global supply chain thing. And so right now, Biden is waging economic warfare against Russia and China to stop Eurasia from happening. You know, the plug-in from, you know, if Germany, Russia, and China cooperate peacefully, then the Atlantic powers are in big danger. They're going to be relegated to a backwater. And so he's basically trying to cut off microchips to China right now, which is also, which goes into that other story about, you know, China complaining about the weather balloons and stuff like that. So we're denying them intercontinental ballistic missiles. So they're going to be relying on things like balloons and stuff. And we're also kind of hamstringing their manufacturing base, you know, by basically they're 10 years behind in their chip making technology relative to the Netherlands. And the Netherlands right now, ASML, I think is the name of the Dutch company that has like a 10-year advance on microchips. And they just cut off. They worked with the Biden administration to cut off all equipment to China. So right now we're watching this kind of economic warfare playing out. And with that South Africa story, it's basically gradating into a military dimension. Like Bismarck said, that war is diplomacy by other means. And so, yeah, this is very concerning.
Very concerning. Well, in that light, we should turn to some maybe good news. A scientist may be able to switch off autism symptoms with a $3 epilepsy drug. In a breakthrough discovery, researchers have used the pill to switch off autism symptoms in mice, according to a new peer-reviewed study published in the Molecular Psychiatry Journal. Autism spectrum disorder is a complex neurological condition that impacts how an estimated 5.4 million adults and 1 in 44 children in the United States perceives and socializes with others. A team of experts at Germany's Hector Institute for Translational Brain Research found that the medication lamotrigine, an anti-seizure drug first approved in the U.S. in 1994, was able to curb behavioral and social problems linked to the disorder. In other medical news, researchers think diet could drive Alzheimer's disease, specifically fructose, which is the sugar found in many fruits and honey. Scientists at the University of Colorado School of Medicine published research in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, finding that the metabolism of fructose is critical to survival, but overeating it leads to inflammation and ultimately dementia. Lead author Dr. Richard Johnson said that laboratory rats kept on high fructose diets build up the same proteins in the brain as those seen in Alzheimer's disease, and that high fructose levels in the brain are a characteristic of Alzheimer's patients. Well, it seems that woke corporate America isn't as willing these days to put its money where its mouth is. Research company Revelio Labs says that corporations in the tech, finance, retail, and restaurant industries are looking to layoffs as a way to cut costs, but the workers hardest hit are the diversity, equity, and inclusion professionals. DEI staffers aim to hire people based on skin color and sexual orientation rather than on merit, while subjecting established employees to compulsory training about how biased they are against so-called underrepresented minorities. Companies that have experienced the largest cuts since last July include Amazon.com, Wells Fargo, American Airlines, and Walmart. Also, Dominion Voting Systems has gotten a big surprise in its $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against Fox News. Dominion argued that Fox made false claims about the company's voting machines being used to rig the 2020 election. But Fox attorneys filed a brief last week stating they have proof that Dominion's own employees expressed serious security concerns about the company's products. The workers noted instances of illicit handling and hacking of voting machines in several states, along with glitches and irregularities that had been reported prior to the 2020 election. The brief also quoted Dominion's Director of Product Strategy and Security, Eric Krumer, as saying that the machines are, quote, riddled with bugs, end quote, and can produce incorrect election results. Dominion countered with its own brief, quoting Fox News hosts Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, privately deriding election fraud claims while supposedly promoting them to viewers. So I would think, Daniel, that Dominion would have to prove material harm, but it seems like they still market one of the most popular products in electronic voting out there. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, and this goes back to the other stories as well. I mean, like, if you look at some of the ownership of Dominion and China, like, keeps coming up. Like, a lot of foreign countries have access and, you know, kind of influence over our elections. And this is a very troubling development. Yeah, I mean, so, oh, and by the way, I just wanted to say, just on the other story as well, about getting rid of the diversity, equity, and inclusion departments in these corporations, there was an article that's also part of the same kind of collapse of global supply chains. And so there was this wonderful article, and it was like 11 things that will change now that free money is drying up and the Fed is raising interest rates. So we were used to this anomalous period of corporations getting all this free money, cheap money. One of the things Stephen Roach talked about was in his book Unbalanced. He's a China expert, Stephen Roach's wonderful book Unbalanced. And if you read it, you'll find out that so much of Wall Street was funded by China, by their savings, right? So Chinese investors would invest in the United States. All these corporations, you know, would have their stock purchased by these, you know, kind of Chinese savers. As that's drying up, all of a sudden, now these corporations have to turn a profit for the first time in 30 years. And now that they have to be competitive and turn a profit, they're cutting these diversity, equity, and inclusion departments. So this is all kind of, you know, part and parcel of the collapse of the global supply chains, you know?
It's absolutely very telling. And in a way, it's good news. I'm not rejoicing over anyone losing their job. But if a job doesn't bring real substantive matter to the table, if it just obstructs other employees, then I'm glad that we're getting rid of that kind of thing. Daniel, yeah, thank you so much for your...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. Thank you so much. And we will see everybody else back on the other side of this break.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.
Imprisonment, forced labor, permanent separation from my family, perhaps death. I knew what could happen to people who were caught trying to defect, but the watchtowers stood yards away. The possibility of a new life in a different world, one without tyranny, was within sight. The West. I thought of the rewards no longer crushed under the boot of communism. I would work and make money, no longer restrained by the chains of collectivism. I would say what I wanted, without fear of spies and informants nearby. I would be free. The frozen rain and Romanian mud seeped through my gloves and cloths. I fantasized about a fire burning in the wood stove of my parents' home. But I pushed those thoughts from my mind closed my eyes and waited for the cover of the darkness.
Get Defector, a true story of tyranny, liberty, and purpose by Mark Hobovkovich with Paul Dragoo, a thrilling page-turner that will remind you how precious yet vulnerable freedom is. Available at shopjbs.org or Amazon. For a limited time, get 20% off your entire order using promo code DEFECTOR20 when you purchase Defector at shopjbs.org.
Welcome back to the New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. This weekend, Americans gathered in Washington, D.C. for the Rage Against the War Machine rally. Let's take a look.
There are no solutions in this town. So why are we here?
Stop supporting the interests of military industrial contractors over the interests of children at home and abroad.
With the issue of war and nuclear war hanging over our head, I think it's critical to build some kind of a movement like this.
And if we don't do something soon in Ukraine, this is where it was decided that the Fourth Amendment just simply didn't matter and our government could spy on us without a warrant. This is where it was decided to imprison and torture journalists like Julian Assange and pressure media platforms to ban anyone.
The New American's Zoe Warren attended. He is the show host of 2A for Today, and he's joining me now to tell us about this experience. Zoe, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Rebecca? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you as well, and that looks like it was very well attended. One thing that I especially note is all the homemade signs. There wasn't a lot of, these pre-printed placards that are funded by George Soros. You didn't see any of that here.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that we're missing were like the large hippie sundresses and naked people and patchouli. But there was lots of weed smoke. You could smell the marijuana. We were around libertarians and Marxists and all sorts. It was an amazing experience. I felt like I was at a college campus that had moved to D.C. So.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I did see that it was hosted by the People's Party and the Libertarian Party. And, of course, we saw in your great video that, because that was your video that you took, right? You put that package together for us.
Yeah, you know, I actually just quickly strung together some of the B-roll for VO. I thought that maybe we would talk over it. So I didn't really prepare it that well. I wish I would have put in our lower third so you could see the first young lady that spoke there. She was one of the organizers for the Libertarian Party. She's the chairwoman of the party, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great. You got to speak with her. Was the other gentleman, was he kind of a man on the street?
That's Garland Nixon. He is a TV personality, kind of a Democratic strategist. It was a mixed bag politically, you know. Ron Paul was there, Tulsi Gabbard was there, Garland Nixon. I mean, he's a Democratic strategist. He goes on Fox and CNN and all those places. And I mean, there were people of all sorts. And so obviously they didn't all agree, except for maybe we shouldn't have nuclear fallout. You know, that we could all agree on that, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, in this age of diversity and inclusion, and they're always trying to push us to, you know, trying to tell us that we're racist and we're sexist and we're all of these ists. When you see a group like this get together with all these very diverse backgrounds, but everybody knows that what we're talking about here is our national survival. So give us a rundown of what the speakers were, who was speaking and what they were talking about?
Yeah, well, they were essentially protesting the American military industrial complex. They want to destroy the war machine. This is the Rage Against the War Machine rally protest. And I mean, it was pretty much you know, a star-studded kind of affair if you're into libertarian thought, you know, essentially that independent middle ground where they don't want to deal with the neoconservatives, the same people that we don't want to deal with that are in the Republican Party, but they also want to, you know, abort babies and smoke weed. And so they don't want to be Republicans either. And so they were essentially protesting the war in Ukraine, how much money we've sent over there. Just the, I mean, obvious things we don't really necessarily agree with, you know. I'm not an interventionist, you know. I don't want us to be an isolationist either, but I'm definitely not an interventionist. And so I could agree with them on that topic. And so they had 10 demands, I think. And if you give me a second, I may be able to pull those demands up. It was a pretty interesting, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely, please do. I mean, while you're doing that, I'll just point out that of course, President Biden is in Poland right now talking with how to defend Ukraine. And of course, we covered in the first segment how Ron DeSantis has pointed out, along with many of our legislators in Washington have pointed out, he completely turns a blind eye to our southern border. And we are experiencing an influx, a war with these Mexican drug cartels. And of course, China, through the Mexican drug cartels, is waging war on our southern border. And then, you know, you have him over in Poland, where Poland's calling for permanent military bases in, permanent American military bases there. On their ground, which is just a setup for World War II. I mean, you're talking about bringing munitions in, bringing armaments in. These are things that take a lot of training. So NATO forces are going to be the ones operating all of this war material that's coming in. That's a setup for World War III, right? So go ahead. Did you have a chance while I was talking? While I'm tittering over here to pull up those 10 points.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The 10 points. Not one more penny for the war in Ukraine. Negotiate peace. Stop the war inflation. Disband NATO. Global nuclear de-escalation. Slash the Pentagon budget. Abolish the CIA and military industrial deep state. Abolish war and empire. Restore civil liberties and free Julian Assange. You know, I don't know that I disagree with any of those things.
Not one.
I'm not a libertarian. I'm not a Marxist, you know, but those are pretty reasonable demands to me, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely they are, because they're self-preservation. It's the preservation of our country, the preservation of our constitutional republic, and that our country was not founded as an empire. We were founded as a separate and independent nation, intended to avoid all those entangling alliances that George Washington warned us about. And, you know, people don't change over time. Situations change, but people don't change. So I think that exactly what you said, even though we come from very diverse backgrounds with certain people who were there, did you run into a lot of conservatives who were in attendance?
You know, I was kind of quarantined off in the little area. I did go out somewhat, but there was a big fence around our area. So I essentially stayed within our fence and cause I, you know, we didn't get to do a lot of man on the street interview stuff. We were trying desperately to get, the key speakers. Like we got Ron Paul. I was there with Igor and,
Veronica Kirilenko.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they got an entire interview series that I was able to shoot for them. And then I'm putting together now to send over to headquarters so that they can actually put those on the website, so you guys can see all the interviews we did. So we were really focused on trying to make sure we were able to get those personalities. And so I didn't do a lot of intermingling with the crowd there. And then right after that, they immediately marched off to the White House to present their demands to who they consider our warmonger in chief, Joe Biden. Right. He probably wasn't home. You know, he's not home anyway, you know.
Right. But, exactly. And how much kind of it did you get, any kind of media coverage of it? Was anyone there covering it?
You know, there were several independent media outlets there. There was a guy that was from Russia that was there, but I did not see, you know, the Alphabet corporate media in attendance. Yeah, I don't expect them necessarily, and if they did come, I expect them to shoot it down. This is a pop art kind of political warfare. And right. so as the guardians, they have to make sure that they maintain the brand image.
Exactly. Are you good at guesstimating crowds? Do you have any kind of an idea what numbers were?
Yeah, I would say probably maybe a little over 2,000, maybe right at 2,000 people there. I mean, it was pretty well attended. I mean, especially since it wasn't, I don't think it was really well advertised. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the Stop the Mandates. Everybody's at home watching the internet and everybody, let's go to the Stop the Mandate rally. And, you know, right. it's like January 6th or something, you know. But it was pretty well attended, especially for the people that came. And it was really a mixed bag of people. I was pretty impressed by that, you know. That
is.
We're called racist and America's white supremacist and X, Y, and Z. But the reality is that that's just marketing. It's just marketing. We are steeped in a milieu of just right. Marxist marketing, and their whole aim is permanent revolution. The whole aim is just to help whoever they can, this ruling class, to maintain dominance. You know, they're the ranchers, we're the cattle, our children don't belong to us, you know, that kind of thing. So
Exactly. We got to guard against that. So thank you so much for sharing with us your experience. Yes, we are following this story at thenewamerican.com. So I'd encourage all of our viewers to visit there. I know that your video and more of Veronica and Igor's follow-ups will be posted there as well. So thank you again so much for your time today. This has been a wonderful kind of shot in the arm knowing that so many people showed up. And for every one of those people who show up, there are the thousands of people who couldn't show up who also support them. So we know that this is a nationwide sentiment. We appreciate you. So thank you. And we will be back right after these messages.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid. And then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
Welcome back to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Recently, I sat down with senior editor Bill Jasper to talk about the importance of the connection between Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein. Let's take a listen. Bill, you recently published a very interesting article in The New American magazine about the Bill Gates-Jeff Epstein connection. And what I want us to explain to our viewers, or you to explain, is why is this connection so important?
Well, for the last several years, America and the world have been awash in scandalous stories about Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted pedophile who supposedly committed suicide, but most reasonable people assume that he was murdered in prison. Scandals involving him and the high and mighty, all the great and good of the world, going from Prince Andrew in the United Kingdom, to top officials, government officials, presidents, CEOs, major corporate movers and shakers. And so most of the media attention has focused simply on the very prurient, scandalous details and titillating stories. But it goes, it's much more important than that, because the people who are associated with Jeffrey Epstein are in the top positions of power in the corporate world, financial world, political world, and academic world, and including, as my article focused on, Bill Gates, who not only is one of the richest men in the world, but is one of the most connected men in the world with all of the top movers and shakers, particularly as we've seen in the last few years with the COVID mandates and the COVID lockdowns. Bill Gates was the face and the voice which made that possible on a global scale. And so, and we can get into it further in there. It goes even deeper than that. Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein both had connections, deep connections to the deep state. And in that I'm referring particularly to the intelligence agencies of the deep state. And so Bill Gates was sexually compromised, as are many of these other top leaders. And as we've seen throughout history, that means that they can be manipulated and forced to do things that may be very harmful to the nation and to the world.
So do you think that that is, you believe that that is why Jeffrey Epstein lost his life?
Well, I think that when you look at the details of his death and all the cover-up that took on and the amazing coincidences that took place, it's hard to believe that he wasn't murdered. And there was plenty of motive to murder him by many people in high places. Many people breathed a big sigh of relief when the announcement came that he was dead, because as the saying goes, dead men tell no tales. But it was very, he had co-conspirators in his nefarious dealings, such as Ghislaine Maxwell. And she hasn't died yet, but she is in prison. And she is very connected to a very storied family with scandals, financial and sexual, and espionage scandals in the background. And I go into that in brief detail in the article as well.
Right, you do. And I think it's important, there's something else you point out, that Prince Andrew has gone down because of his connection to Jeff Epstein, but Bill Gates seems immune to it. How do you explain that?
Well, there are several explanations for that. One of them being that, as we point out in the article, the Columbia Journalism Review, which is a left-wing liberal outfit out of Columbia University, a couple of years ago did an in-depth study on the millions, the hundreds of millions of dollars that Bill Gates had poured into all of the top thought cartel outlets, such as the New York Times, NPR, PBS, CNN, the Washington Post. So he has been buying basically a PR campaign from all of these organizations for the past couple of decades. And this has resulted in hundreds of thousands of stories favorable to Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation over that time period. And so there is very little criticism of him, and they have kept even the Epstein scandal pretty much under wraps. They let a little bit out. They have limited hangouts from time to time, but nothing that really gets to the heart of the matter.
Right. Now, let's go back. You mentioned Ghislaine Maxwell earlier, but she's not the only Maxwell sister involved here, is she?
Right. Well, Robert Maxwell had seven children. Robert Maxwell was a British media tycoon, a business mogul, who in the 1970s and 80s built up a huge media empire. And it began with an investment by MI6, which is British intelligence and British foreign intelligence. And he worked not only with and for British foreign intelligence, but he also worked with the Soviet KGB at that time and with the Israeli Mossad, and then later with the CIA. So he was, one book put it, the super spy, Israel's super spy. But he was a super spy working for a number of countries. But he got a little bit too ambitious and He ended up dead in 1991. He fell off his yacht, supposedly, and drowned. And his yacht was named Lady Ghislaine, which is his youngest daughter, his favorite daughter, reportedly. And so he left behind five children. Two of his children had died earlier in childhood. But the five children also, the two sons and the three daughters, also were involved in his various companies that had intelligence ties. And he had helped pioneer the offshore banking and trusts and foundations to shelter money, black ops money. And so he trained them as well, in addition to Jeffrey Epstein. That's where Jeffrey Epstein comes in, back in the either the late 1980s or early 1990s. But after he was, after Robert Maxwell died, Ghislaine Maxwell moved to New York. She had been there many times with her father and took up residence with Jeffrey Epstein. So we see the Maxwell-Epstein connection going back many years. And she became his lead procurer, his female pimp for bringing in young girls and allegedly, reportedly boys for sexual romps with the wealthy and the politically connected.
Unbelievable. It's such a sad and a dark world. And we know it goes on. This is what I'm going to ask you, what might sound like kind of a funny question. In an ideal world, what would the outcome of all of this be? And on the other side of that same coin, what do you think the outcome of all of this is actually going to be in the real world?
Well, I mean, ideally, we would see a thorough investigation, and those people who are guilty of this pedophile sex trade would be prosecuted and incarcerated, and they would be stripped. Not we saw with Prince Andrew, he got a little bit of a comeuppance in that he was stripped of his titles and of his military titles, and was booted out of the palace, but Buckingham Palace. But it needs to go further than that. These people have engaged in crimes of the worst kind, and so, and now much of what has come out thus far has been of young women in their 17, 18, 19, who have made charges against him. But there are many other there's a lot of other evidence that they were much younger, and a huge number of children that were brought here from all over the world. For the last few years, it's been primarily from Ukraine and Russia and Eastern Europe. And so that's what should happen. These people, this should be thoroughly investigated and prosecuted. And it's and not only for justice in the case of the victims here, but what is the ultimate objective? This is a blackmail operation, and blackmail for what purpose? To ensure that certain policies are carried out. And what are those policies? Well, most of these people, like Isabel Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein. Isabel Maxwell is one of the sisters. She is a World Economic Forum thought leader, with the Great Reset and Klaus Schwab and the gang. Many of the other people, Bill Gates, who's associated with, is also World Economic Forum. So they are carrying out these programs, which are really traitorous to their individual countries. Here in the United States, that means it's treason against the United States. They are trying to subvert and pervert this country. And so it's very consequential what they're doing. And ideally, this will be investigated. And hopefully, the new Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government will dig into this. They have many things to dig into. But if you look at the number of people in high level of office and in government and in the corporate world that are involved in this, it's very hard to exaggerate what the importance of this is and how it affects all of the laws and policies that we see and that we are dealing with every day.
Right. Tell everybody, we're running out of time here, but I want you to have a chance to tell everybody where to find your article, where to find your research into this very important situation.
Well, the article that we mentioned here at the beginning is on the newamerican.com. We are going to be following up on it. We've done a number of other articles that we'll link to as well on that, but we're going to follow up on that, and we'll have print magazine articles on it as well.
Fantastic. That is great. We appreciate all of your research and bringing this to light, because the major media is just simply ignoring it or covering up. Of course, I think we know what camp they're in, right? So
So we have to rely on you, Rebecca, to get it out there.
That's why I'm interviewing you. It's been wonderful talking with you, Bill. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Very interesting information. Please visit us at thenewamerican.com, where you can find Bill Jasper's recent article along with more information about these important issues. And we will see you back on the other side of this break.
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for The New American Magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American Magazine represents an alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country is in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American Magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son Noah did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board, and I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack, and because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
Welcome back to The New American TV, where we report the truth behind the news. Joining me for our last segment today is a gentleman I'm very pleased to be able to call friend. He is Robert M. Owens, and he is the Midwest Regional Field Director for the John Birch Society. He's based in Ohio, but his territory goes all over the Midwest. And Robert, I'm very, very pleased to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I think we're still getting your camera set up, aren't we? There's that bow tie I love so much. I'm a nurse, so I always like bow ties better. They're better than the long ties. They don't have as much surface for bacteria to grow on.
Yeah, right.
That's the way nurses think. Well, welcome to the show, and I wanted to talk to you about your field work. You are always bringing me so many news stories and great ideas for things to follow up on. I can't possibly follow up on all of it because I am only one person, but I wish I could, and I wish I could clone you as well. So what's happening out there in the field?
Well, you know, the big news occurred this weekend in Michigan. So the state party had their convention, the state Republican Party, and the neoconservative wing of the Republican Party was ripped out by the root, not one vestige left. hardened constitutionalist was the only thing that was going to be acceptable, and a deep understanding of the international conspiracy that is absolutely destroying our country from the inside, and an understanding that groups like the Council on Foreign Relations are infiltrating American politics, especially the Republican Party, to do damage to our heritage of liberty and to reduce the standard of living in America to essentially that of a third world nation. So our members, our leaders, we're very active in this process. And I should say that the John Birch Society does not, we're nonpartisan, we don't endorse. As Jack McManus, former president of the John Birch Society, likes to say, our members are so well-educated, they don't need anybody to tell them how to vote. In this particular instance, we helped lead and support through our agenda in our messaging members to get active in this process. And as a result, Christina Caramo, a wonderful constitutionalist, a lady that puts God first and is willing to fight the globalists, was elected chairman of the Republican Party for the state of Michigan, and virtually every office throughout the state and even throughout the counties is now dominated by people that 100% adhere to the JBS agenda. And that's about as exciting as it gets.
That is wonderful news, especially because when you look at Michigan, okay, the governor is not just a Democrat, but seemingly a Marxist. And then the legislature, both House and Senate, are majority Democrat, and they're certainly very, very leftist Democrat. So this is a very positive thing. You bringing us this good news about Michigan is certainly a shot in the arm. For instance, I know just the other day we reported on all of the gun control measures that the legislature has introduced now in the wake of that shooting at Michigan State University.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's exciting is because we're talking about sophisticated constitutionalists that have taken these leadership positions, we're seeing real movement on issues like nullification, because one of the things that we at the John Birch Society like to talk about is even if you live in what's considered a liberal state, you'll often find that a lot of the counties, a lot of the surrounding counties are very conservative. And if you can get in and educate your sheriff and some of the local political leaders in their community that they have a right to use the doctrine of nullification to say those things won't apply in our community, well, you can still have amazing impact to safeguard our liberties and help lead our nation back to our heritage of liberty. So there's some really exciting projects that can happen using the tools and the guidance of the John Birch Society. And at least in the state of Michigan, man, right now the red carpet has rolled out for our message and the methodology that we have. And so, especially if you're living in Michigan, no excuse, got to get busy right now.
And so how do they? Let's direct people. We go to jbs.org. Go ahead. You can take over from
there. Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, know that here's the winning plan, and we should understand the winning plan. First of all, we have to understand that we are a constitutional republic and what that means. And it's key. And the John Birch Society has some wonderful materials for that. In written form, we have a wonderful pamphlet called Republics and Democracies. So if you're a reader, get that. If you're a video watcher, we've got a wonderful video called Overview of America. It's 29 minutes and it'll really get you clued into what's going on. So first of all, we have to understand what our government should be. That's step one. Step two, we have to understand the enemy. We have to understand these globalist elite and what they're about and who they're about. And if you read our magazine, the New American Magazine, or you watch our videos with any regularity, the videos that you put out, the videos that so many of our talented people put out, you will understand the globalist elite and you will be part of a informed resistance in that process. So that's first, is you have to be educated enough to be able to be on the field of play, right? Right. We've got the materials to get you there. Now, once you're ready to be in the field of play, then it's time to get involved. And we've got local chapters of the John Birch Society all over the country, certainly all over Michigan, but all over the country. And what you want to do is you want to get involved by going to the John Birch Society. You can call our 800 number even, 1-800-JBS-USA1. And Rebecca, here's what's awesome about that. If somebody were to call our number, you'll talk to a human being. Yes, an actual human being that speaks English. That even speaks English, yes. Right? And they will get you plugged in your community with a coordinator and with teams that can really help you make a difference in your community. And that's step two. And that'll really, that's how what we need to do to get busy.
Absolutely. And the thing is, too, you're saying, yes, we need to educate ourselves, but we're not talking about a four-year college degree. It doesn't take that much to understand what our Constitution is about. It's about restricting federal government. And it also doesn't take much to study and find out what nullification means. And I want you to go into that. And then I want to turn also to something interesting that you told me that was happening in Ohio. But first, let's cover nullification first and really explain that.
Yeah, absolutely. So nullification is just a doctrine that says, hey, you as a lesser magistrate, if you've been given an order that is not lawful, well, you shouldn't follow it. And, you know, we can even think of it, you know, first in the basic construct of like the Nazi prison camp guard. Right. We would expect somebody that was, you know, in the army, right? They're there to follow orders. But if you're instructed to start murdering innocent civilians, well, you know what? You've got a moral obligation to say, no, not do it. And we see this as even as a biblical principle. When Pharaoh ordered the Hebrew midwives to murder the Hebrew baby boys, they said no. And they were blessed by God as a result. So this doctrine has made its way into American law from the same standpoint. And in fact, you will see, for example, right in the Constitution, in Article 6 of the Constitution, that state government agents and local government agents have to take an oath to the U.S. Constitution. Now, why is that? They're not federal agents. They're state or they're county officials. Well, it's because the purpose of that is that should the federal government exceed their boundaries, then not only is it the right of a state or local agent to say, no, that's not enforceable, it's actually their constitutional duty to intervene and say, no, that's not acceptable, and we're not going to follow that in our jurisdiction. So we've seen that play out in a number of communities where sheriffs have said, hey, I'm not going to enforce these unconstitutional gun laws, or I'm not going to enforce unconstitutional lockdown orders. And we need to get this messaging out and know that we can provide support to these officials, that if they say these things, they know that they've got solid legal authority to rest their decisions on, that they have solid community authority as well to make these proclamations and know that they'll stick. Because ultimately, there's going to be no accountability at any level of politics until there's accountability at the electorate level.
Absolutely. And you're working hard with all of your JBS chapters that you oversee to make sure that everybody understands that. And they're all working toward that in their own local jurisdictions. So it's a big, everybody's kind of headed in the same direction, even though just working locally. You don't have to, you don't have to eat the whole elephant. It's just those one little, those little pieces.
When we use, advanced techniques, we can make amazing headway. And let me just give you this example so that people can understand the construct. Say, for example, we want to teach a sheriff nullification so that he'll defend Second Amendment rights, all sorts of things, right? But say you don't have an existing relationship with your sheriff and you don't know where they are politically. Well, what we teach is to use our tools through the Law Enforcement Charitable Foundation to go to them and begin the relationship, not through political discussion, but by saying, hey, police get a bad rap in the media. We want people in our community to know that police can be real heroes, and throw a banquet for Local Hero Day, right? Have an opportunity to create relationships with local police by honoring people that do great work in the community. And through that process, you can develop a relationship. So what you then bring to them, hard, solid, good data in ways that police people understand, like prosecution packets, and we have that kind of data, right? Well, then they'll take you seriously, and then you can actually get access and start bringing them up to speed. So if you want to make a difference in your community, use the tools of the John Birch Society and use our experts that will help you look like political geniuses. And that's how we start winning this battle.
Absolutely. We're running out of time, but I did want to hit on what's happening in Ohio, because you had a rhino takeover that you told me about recently. Could you give us a little summation of that?
Yeah, sure. So in Ohio, we've been making tremendous grounds at the state legislature, really hammering in these concepts of constitutionalism and nullification and dealing with some of the critical issues that were faced. And as a result, we had a tremendous victory in the last November election, easily electing the most conservative state legislature in, I mean, the last 50 years, if not certainly more than that. I mean, it's unbelievable. There are 99 members, for example, of the Ohio House. 67 of those 99 were Republicans. And there was a supermajority even to override a somewhat lefty Republican governor as well. Now, what happened was that as a result of that, the by far the most conservative Speaker of the House candidate in my lifetime was put up and was voted on by the Republican caucus to become Speaker of the House for the 2023-2024 legislative session. And as a result of that, the liberals rebelled and they splintered off 22 Rhino Republicans, joined with the Democrat caucus to elect sort of the darling of the lobbyist set, a guy named Jason Stevens, to become Speaker of the House and deny the conservative caucus chosen member. And as a result, the state party of the Republican Party issued a censure against those 22 Republicans. And there's a huge effort underway to essentially force them to their knees through local censures. And essentially calls on resignations. And we've already had one resignation take place and tremendous political pressure being put on the rest in the process. And in that way, they're finding that cuddling up to the lobbyists is creating enormous political, in fact, potentially fatal political damage. And that's what we need to make sure these politicians know. There's consequences for their actions.
There are, and it sounds like you're fulfilling that. If you're not having fun when you're barching, you're not doing it right. It sounds like you're having a great time and making great strides. We're out of time, but we appreciate your time and your insights. We encourage everyone to visit us at jbs.org, find out how you can do more. We are out of time, so we will see everybody back here tomorrow.
Thanks so much.